If half of America was watching this on television, should I assume that all of you were watching it on TV? For those of you who are? Yes. Yes, of course. We were all watching this on TV. And so began in my extended family a 10-year complaint about hair. It's enchanting looking at these pictures now, isn't it? And thinking that for 10 years it was like, I can't tell if they're a boy or a girl. Hair that long. I don't know what they were looking at anymore. I don't know what was so transgressive about the Beatles, the mop tops, I guess they called them, right? The great lads from Liverpool. Here's the deal, what is so extraordinary, and I am not a musician, would that I were. I understand the visual process very well. I understand design and painting and things of that nature, but I do not understand where music comes from. It's magic to me. It just, I don't understand it. But the Beatles started out sort of as a derivative band. They were doing R&B, American early rock, and having a bar-oriented lifestyle in Liverpool and Hamburg for about 3 years. They came together in 1960. And then somehow they turned into the Beatles. Late in 1963, came to America a sensation in 1964. On February 9th, 1964, keep in mind this is also 10 weeks after John Kennedy had been killed. So it interesting time, you know, for something like this to happen. But then the music, if you do know music, and I know a lot of you are musicians, that in quick succession, they did Meet the Beatles in 1963, A Hard Day's Night in 1964, Help in 1965, Rubber Soul in 1965, Revolver in 66, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in 67, The White Album in 68, Yellow Submarine and Abbey Road in 1969. And Let It Be in 1970, and it was over. It was 6 years of an extraordinary, creative, and innovative explosion that I don't know how one accounts for such things other than it was magic. When people ask me to define synergy, you know, that was so important, talking about synergy in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, about synergy. About when two things come together, it's more than the sum of the parts. The only honest synergistic thing I can think of is Lennon and McCartney, because they didn't create that kind of music when they were separate. It happened when they were a pair. That was real synergy. It didn't exist afterwards. We've been talking the last several weeks. Creativity last week, and imagination the week before that. And one of the third important concept in the creative process is indeed innovation by way of quick refresher. Imagination, a capacity unique to human consciousness, so we believe at this point. Imagination is an ability to create in mind, in your particular mind, an event, an image, or an idea of things that are not present to the senses. Not present to touch, to sight, to reading, to smell, or to the ear. It's an ability to create something which generates a feeling that does not actually exist yet, but in our nation of images, our imagination, that we can somehow coin it and make it a reality. The next step in the creative process is about creativity itself, and creativity is a process. It is not an arrival point ever. It is an ongoing process. To say one is creative means one is always in a process of having original ideas of value. according to the teacher, Dr. Holmes, our great teacher. Or maybe it was Thomas Troward who said that our capacities and consciousness are initiation and selection. Well, this is what creativity involves, a process of having an original idea that has value. What kind of idea has value? Something that you can do something about. Something that you actually can do something about. If the image that we have is way out here, and we want to get there, the thing that we need to do is have a creative impulse and be able to take a step in this direction. That is an idea that has value. Something I can do something about. Ideas that are fantasy driven are good for the purpose of the imagination. But if we cannot, in our process of creativity, come up with at least a first step in the realization of that, then we're not involved in a process. We're daydreaming. When Dorothy says, I want to go to Oz, the question is, how do I get there? Glinda says, I don't know, but maybe if you follow the yellow brick road. Can I imagine following this path that is put out before me? Okay. That is an idea of value. And so the creative process begins. The third step is innovation. And it's the process of putting these original ideas into practice. A lot of us have very active imaginations, yes? And a lot of us are involved in creative processes of one form or another. Where a lot of us can use some encouragement is in innovating. In taking the idea that you have that is of value and not being intimidated to do something with it. This is usually where the gap is. And what we seek to do here is to close the gap between what we know and how we are currently living. To continue, bring to mind a clear and objective look at the circumstances of our individual lives and to say this is the way it actually is and realize that there is a, or where I want to go and this is the way it really is, and what then can I do to begin to close this gap? Because most of us have waited way, way, way too long for somebody to do it for us, and what we've all learned is that she ain't coming. So we have to do these kinds of things for ourselves. Where the Beatles got the idea to adapt a kind of traditional Memphis-y sort of R&B and think that that was okay for them to sing, I don't know, but that's a perfect example of innovation. Taking an idea, realize I want to, you know, have some kind of musical career and I like this sounds, can I bring something fresh to it? And if you're doing it, it is going to be fresh. And then actually finding a performance venue and practicing, getting the opportunity to be in a place where you can continue to practice your craft until the next opening is revealed. What is so amazing to me is that it appears, in telling the story, just looking at the career of the Beatles, these 6 short years, it appears that they continually innovated, sometimes twice a year, of completely reinventing themselves, and they did not stumble. Where you get that kind of fearlessness, maybe that's what being 24 is about. But they did not stumble. They kept meeting with critical and commercial success with every innovation. That would not have been true of the Dave Clark Five, would it? They were the first people that knocked the Beatles out of number one position. I do not remember the song. Herman's Hermits, I remember pretty well. But the Dave Clark Five, I do not remember. Why? I don't know. But we think things are moving fast now, and they really, really are. But the Beatles moved really, really fast. Continued to challenge themselves. Now, we know that some of these challenges or innovations were because they were pharmaceutically enhanced, and I'm not recommending any of that to anybody, to have a Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds kind of experience. Nevertheless, the takeaway is that they found a way, once they came down from tripping, obviously, to apply, to frame it in a meaningful way that seemed fresh and interesting and exciting, and by God, it was. It was the whole time. So then here's the great question. You know, what do we have to do to be fearless innovators in our own life? We all got ideas. Every one of us does. We all have ideas. And they're all good. And all of us that are here are creative. We learn that everything we think has creative input into our lives, and indeed that we are the primary creative force in our own life. What we think about most of the time will create the future. This is a given at this point. This is no longer brand new. It wasn't new when Jesus talked about it 2,000 years ago, or the Buddha talked about it 500 years before him, or in the Upanishads and the Vedas 500 or 1,000 years before that. This is the perennial philosophy. It is as old as the stars. There comes a point, though, where it is a breakthrough for us, and it is new information, and that's why we originally called this work New Thought, because it's the moment that we get how life works. That's what New Thought is. When we stop thinking that there's something to believe, or something that I have to memorize, or something that has to be appeased, there's only one thing we need to change: our thinking, use our imagination, participate consciously in a creative process, because all of our unconscious participation is still creating a life which may not be one that you're liking a whole lot. And then constantly be innovative. Ernest Holmes was an innovator. And that's one of the very cool things about our work. The New Thought movement was innovative. It was a people's movement that started at some point. These ideas came together sometime after the Civil War. It is a people's movement, and we are sure that it was a people's movement, not an institution-led movement, because women were at the forefront of it from the very beginning. That's how you know it was a people's movement. It was not supported by organizations and institutions. It was a challenge to it. It was, as we say in management these days, it was disruptive. The way Ralph Waldo Emerson was disruptive to the establishment. When he first gave his divinity school address, I think it was 1844, he was literally thrown off the campus of Harvard. You know what he said, don't you? He went and he talked to the people that were being ordained Unitarian ministers, and he said, "Look, forget the church thing. It's a complete waste of time." Literally. So he was not allowed back on campus until they had to give him an honorary degree 40 years later, because they were forced into that. And so we are the children of Ralph Waldo Emerson. I like to say we're the love children of Ralph Waldo Emerson and Mary Baker Eddy. That's good, right? Yeah, that's fair enough. And indeed, Ernest Holmes picked up on that. He read Emerson, he read Thomas Troward, and he certainly knew about Christian Science, which was the prevailing religious denomination in Los Angeles in the 19-teens, hundreds, and in the 20s. And he innovated. He made a practical application of a new insight, because it was new to him and it was exciting to him. It wasn't new at all, but it was exciting to him. And so religious science is born at this moment as an innovation, as a reformed kind of Christian science. Less burdensome, without an institution or institutional control. And that was the great innovation that was given to us. This is the point of today's talk. So, where are we now in 2011? We're about 100 years, almost 100 years, we're 90 years into religious science, such as it is. I guess Dr. Holmes wrote Creative Mind in 1916, I think. And, you know, how are we doing and where are we now? Are we still on the innovative edge? Are we still on the cutting edge or not? Now, arguably, we always are on the cutting edge because there's somebody that's going to be coming here at any given moment and they're going to need to hear an idea that might be new to them. And that idea is that, no, life is not out to get you. And that life will be back to you what you are to it. And that the God of your understanding is the creative principle of the universe, no more, no less. This is what you need to know. And we practice this at deeper and deeper and deeper levels throughout our whole lives. And it is a lifelong process because we become aware of how we are resisting that truth or how we are keeping this gap between what we really want and the current effects of our life, that somehow we are sustaining this gap by unconscious behavior. I read a statement yesterday. I was at the Antiquarian Book Fair in Pasadena, California, and I picked up something, and I was reading a statement of Truman Capote's, and he said, effective writing is more about scissors than pencils. And I thought, tell me more about that, Truman Capote. What do you mean about that? And he said, yes, to be a really good writer. I mean, you write and you write and you write and you write, but then you got to go over and take out the things that you're so in love with. Effective writing is more about scissors than it is pencils. And maybe that's really what the point of growing in self-awareness is about, is to become aware of how am I resisting? What have I thrown into the story that I keep telling about life that no longer serves me? And be willing to let it go, even though I may have invested my whole life in this story. Well, so be it. The maintenance of the story is what tradition is. And there are good things about tradition. I value our heritage. I know a lot about it. That's how you can tell I value it. Because I care enough to keep doing research. Even now, I just found another new book about 19th century consciousness. I'm always engaged in learning and honoring the past. But where are we again? Where are we right now? I think that we need to be very conscious of being innovative in a very aggressive way all over again. For those of you that started in religious science next door, at Dr. Bitzer's church, you know, that was the first church that was built in America in the 30s. And that church experience, I gather, I never had the pleasure, but that church experience was very different than what was going on elsewhere down at Founders Church, because I know they were singing the Lord's Prayer, they always did, at Founders Church, and I gather that Dr. Bitzer did not do that. That was an innovation of his, even though that would have seemed like a loss or even sacrilegious to people who may have had more of a Christian science bent. But Dr. Bitzer had on his mind, I've got a unique statement to make here. And this is how I choose to be in integrity with what I understand this teaching to be. And so for me here, I'm going to make these kinds of choices about how I will do my teaching. And I know that was so motivating to Mr. Neal and to Dr. Walker, and they were lit a fire with that and then carried that torch. And here we are. But what innovation do we need to bring? People also often say, I don't know why every seat in the theater isn't full. And my answer is, I don't know why it isn't either. I really don't. But I have to assume the responsibility of finding out. I'm talking a little bit about church management here. I haven't done this in a long, long time. But this is a great day to do it. We have to do something in addition to what we do now so that we don't become irrelevant. Arguably, the Christian Science movement has been completely made irrelevant. There's only one large church that's still standing, and that is in Pasadena. I drove by it yesterday. All the other grand Christian Science churches have been sold in the last 4 years since I've been back here. And I don't accept that as a necessary fate. What I want everybody to hear really, 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 really clearly, also with this moment, is that because of your generosity, we're doing okay. We're not doing great. We're doing okay. And I know that everybody gets it. And I do know that everybody is giving at a very, very meaningful level. So this isn't anybody's problem. This is not your problem out there. But we need to get more seats in here, more butts in seats, literally. If we're going to have a really long-lasting, vital ministry, we have to identify how can we repurpose, not change, but how do we reframe, how do we refocus a little bit to make it appear to be, to the outside eye, as relevant and as exciting as it actually is. So the answer is there are a couple of things that I have in my mind that I have discussed with the board, and we're going to give it a shot over the next year or two. We'll see if it makes a difference or not. Who was here last week? Most of all y'all here last week? You know, I loved doing an all-music service that had commentary in between. So maybe we'll do that 4 times a year. Why not? We do not have to be a slave to tradition. Well, that's not the way we do it. Well, you know, Dr. Bitzer wasn't doing it the way we do it in 1930. You know, so who are we and what service do we hope to provide? A meaningful educational experience is what we want to do. That's what the work is here. A meaningful education experience. If any of us, and this includes me, are still having the same problems that I had a year ago, then I've got more teaching to do, don't I? If any of us are not moving on or finding any meaningful growth in the prime direction that you want, then we got to get busier here. And what does the busier look like? I'm not 100% clear, and therefore I'm not hurrying into anything, because I always go slow to go fast. But I do know that there are value adds, I think, that we have to add to our experience now that are more of a practical nature. What we know about law, we're never going to know anything more about law than we know right now. God is the creative principle of the universe. For the most part, what I think about life is the experience I'll have. Go figure. You know, I can't talk about it much anymore. And if all of our life experience is about love and law, then what we want to do is practice ways of being loving, which isn't necessarily about service or holding hands or doing anything of that nature. But how do I behave in this world in ever more skillful ways. And if I need to learn a little bit more about emotional intelligence, then I'm going to devote myself to emotional intelligence. And if I need to learn a little bit more about meditation, then we need to learn a little bit more about meditation and the importance of the quiet mind. I purposely have quiet time at the end of every service because that's when your week begins, you know? That is the foundation stone upon which your week begins, with the quiet time. Because quiet is the only thing. You know, if you say that music is the universal language, there's something even more universal, and that is the silence. Because it has the same aspiration and the same utility in every culture. And so there are going to be a couple of things. Education will be different next year than it will be, than it has been in the past. And I'm talking about in September. So anything that we're going to do is a ways off. But it's all geared to the fact of being perceived as being different, useful, and really relevant to the way we are now. The great triumph, I heard some minister friends complaining about Oprah, bless her heart. And Wayne Dyer and that Deepak Chopra and Oprah, they're just giving it all away. And I say, okay, we have to know that we won. Religious science changed the national conversation. We won! And Oprah's making $1 billion on it. Go figure, you know. But I know people are staying home watching Super Soul Sunday because Oprah does church on TV now. Great. Then we got to have a reason to understand why it's so important to be together live and not sitting home watching television. That is not the blessing in the long run for anybody's health. The great blessing is when our animal bodies get to be together and we have more music, because that draws us here and it opens up our hearts and it takes down our resistance. So there are all kinds of little things. You know, everything that goes on here is considered and nothing is done randomly. But all of this is to be more relevant, more meaningful, more effective, and more grace-filled. That is the work that I'm taking on to do. And I want to encourage everybody. And again, you know, our basic work is potentiating prayer. So make sure that's a part of your life. Yeah, come on, guys. Make sure that's a part of your life. That will never change. But this is a creation ministry. Not a healing ministry, because even Dr. Holmes says there's nothing to be healed. But you know what? There's always something to create. So let's be about the business of creating personal lives that are really strong, vital, relevant, and prosperous in the way that it's meaningful for you. And then when that's true for you, it'll be true for the center. Yes? So it is. God bless you, friends.